From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Climate change promises dramatic changes to Florida's coastal wetlands. Ahead of a conference aimed at protecting the Estero Bay, we'll talk with a biologist with 30 years of experience in Florida about the threats facing the Gulf Coast, what to expect as sea levels rise, and ways we can adapt to protect our shorelines. And wildlife is falling prey to your pet's natural killer instincts. It's just one of the many ways people contribute to thousands of injuries each year to wildlife in our region. Wildlife experts from the Vaughn Arks Wildlife Hospital at the Conservancy of Southwest Florida will tell us what you can do to enjoy the outdoors with your pets without causing grief for the wild animals who call Southwest Florida home. First, the news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. It may come as a shock to know that there are vicious predators living under our own roofs, but yes, those fluffy furball kitty cats we love are actually little hunters whose instincts to bring home the occasional bird or rodent is having a pretty serious impact on wildlife. Colleen Cosgrove with the Conservancy of Southwest Florida just completed a study on the subject. She's here to talk to us about that. Also, Joanna Fitzgerald is here from the Conservancy to talk about other ways that we, our pets, are unwittingly hurting our wildlife neighbors, and how we can be a little more aware and careful. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You can get involved in the conversation, too, by giving us a call at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. You can also reach out on Facebook, WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU. Tweet us using the hashtag GCL. We're talking about cats. The common little house cat, which once allowed outside, suddenly becomes a bird assassin. Colleen, how serious of a problem is this?
It's quite a big problem. Studies have shown that a third of cats that go outside will actually capture and kill animals. So it's pretty widespread.
And how? What kind of numbers are they bringing in? I mean,
it's estimated that they'll kill about 2 animals a week. And so in the U.S., they're up to about almost 3 billion birds and about 12 billion mammals a year.
Wow. That is a lot of little animals being presented as presents to parents.
Yes.
Who may not really appreciate that.
Correct.
What made you want to study this?
I see it every day at the Wildlife Hospital. We get lots of animals in from cat attacks. You know, the owners seem a little oblivious. Oh, it wasn't my cat, or oh, he never does this every once in a while. And it just seemed like something that I could really study and try and make a difference with because the owners can have so much effect on their own cats.
How?
The best solution is to keep your cat inside. Obviously, this is going to keep wildlife safe because the cat can't catch them. It's also a really, really good idea for your cat. It's very dangerous for cats to be outside. They can get hit by a car. They can get diseases. They can get attacked by other pets or wildlife. They can also climb into things, get stuck in trees, drink from puddles that you don't know what it is, if it's poison, things like that. So it's just a lot safer for them to be inside, and then that way they cannot hurt wildlife.
Yeah, especially in Florida. I would imagine leaving your cat outside is pretty dangerous. I mean, cats are pretty self-sufficient and they're kind of tough, but I mean, there's a lot of tougher stuff out there. Joanna, are there other problems or injuries that you see coming into the Vaughn Arks Animal Hospital that's caused by domestic animals interacting with wildlife?
Along with the cats, we actually do see quite a few dog attacks, again, with the small mammals and birds. Also with the tortoises, when you let your dog out, you might have a few acres and you have it fenced in, so you think your dog is being safe. But they go out and they find a tortoise and they will just sit there and chew on that tortoise like a rawhide bone. The tortoise is still alive, feeling all of that. And then when you go out, your dog brings it into you and you realize the damage that's been done. So both dogs and cats do quite a bit of damage to native wildlife.
And, well, you mentioned the tortoise, but what kind of animals are most at risk? I would imagine smaller?
Typically, it is young animals. Nesting rabbits are our number one victim of both dog and cat attacks. In the springtime, we get a lot of birds that are learning to fly from the ground. That's what a healthy fledgling does. And they're just easy targets. So it is usually the helpless ones that are more at risk that can't flee. I had adopted a dog from the Humane Society, and she could catch anything. So it doesn't always have to be helpless ones. She could catch anything. Some dogs are just amazing hunters.
Yeah, they were kind of bred to do that.
Yeah, many of them are. The hounds, yeah.
Yeah, and even the terriers with the going to the ground,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Who just watched the dog show? That would be me over Thanksgiving holiday. So let me ask you about the birds that you're seeing being attacked. Are there certain kinds of bird populations in Southwest Florida that are particularly vulnerable?
I would say the ones we see most common are mourning doves and common ground doves. I don't know if it's just because they tend to be more on the ground than the other songbirds that you would see up in the trees more. You know, they go down on the ground and they eat the seed. And so they seem to come in a lot more than others. During baby bird season, though, it's really any species will get caught once they're on that fledgling stage.
And when they come in, what kind of conditioner are we talking with? I mean, usually the cats that I've seen that have done this, there's really not much to work with. Do people catch them early or?
A lot of times the cat will bring them into the house or they'll find it out in the yard with a cat next to it. The cats will puncture. They've got really sharp teeth. That's from evolution, part of their kind of being excellent hunters. A lot of times we'll see deep punctures. We'll see lacerations. A lot of times on the bunnies and doves with really thin skin, the skin, this is graphic, but the skin will even get pulled back a little. And so it's really, really severe injuries. And on top of all that, cats have a lot of bacteria in their mouth. And so even if they bite an animal and don't really leave a mark, they've left that bacteria inside that animal. And now he's going to be at risk for infection. And oftentimes they'll die just from that infection.
So then what do you do when they get there? I mean, if you have a one that's been bit, I'm imagining antibiotics are in order.
Yeah. Immediately, you know, assessing the damage, cleaning the wounds, getting them on pain medication, antibiotics, and very precise medical treatment follow-up to make sure we aren't getting more of an infection, abscesses from those deep puncture wounds, things like that. Sometimes you are correct. The damage is so severe, honestly, we can't do anything but provide a humane euthanasia because the suffering is intense. There is no way that animal is going to survive. And that is something we can do, thankfully, to ease their suffering. But if they do have a chance, we do have to get them on antibiotics, and people don't realize that. Sometimes they keep the animal thinking they can put, you know, Neosporin or something on it, and that is not what's best for the animal. They need to get in and get serious medication. And
Neosporin's not going to cut it.
It's not going to cut it, no.
No. We have a comment from Facebook. Holly, she's telling us she really thinks that domestic cats should always be kept inside, and at the very least, if you're allowing them to roam outside, they should be wearing big, loud bells. Would that be helpful, alerting prey animals to an oncoming cat?
It can be helpful. Studies have definitely looked at that, and it does help a little bit. But in most studies, for both the bells and there's the audiovisual alarm, the cats get used to it pretty quickly, and they figure out how to move without jingling the bell.
Oh, they are just wily, those cats.
Yeah. There is another option called the cat bib, and it's kind of this big square bib that you put on the cat, and it hangs, and it kind of messes them up when they're about to pounce. And that has a lot better numbers in reducing the amount of animals that they're able to catch.
Almost like a cone of shame, sort
of. A little bit, yeah. Just kind of hangs down in front.
Well, I did a little bit of research. I don't have a cat. I'm allergic. And I can't be around them because I will pet them because they're cute. They were most famously, everybody thinks they were domesticated and revered 4,000 years ago by the ancient Egyptians. But researchers in Cyprus have discovered remains of a human with a cat buried by their side from 9,500 years ago, which is a lot longer than what a lot of people commonly thought. And that would be the earliest evidence of possible, and I'm using air quotes, domestication. But when we look at our other favorite companion animal, that being dogs, scientists believe they may have been man's best friend for up to 40,000 years, which is significantly longer. Also, genetically, dogs are more different from their wild descendants, wolves, than modern domestic cats are from wild cats. So some scientists, including a geneticist from Washington University, his name's Wesley Warren, he says because of this genetic closeness, he thinks that house cats aren't really fully domesticated. I mean, this might kind of explain that untrainable hunting instinct. Is it possible to train a cat to not hunt?
No, it is instinct. Yeah, and I think it's because they've evolved from that common ancestor with all of our big cats, our lions, our tigers, etc. It is just instinct. It's not because they're hungry. It's not because they're bored. It's just an instinct that they're going to get when they go outside and see something.
You can give them all the Friskies in the world, and they're still going to want to go out there. And
yeah.
Do they think it's playtime?
It's unclear. They only eat about a fourth of what they catch, and they only bring back to their owner about a fourth of what they catch, and the other half they just leave there. So it's not clear what exactly the purpose is.
To get inside the mind of a cat and find out what they are thinking when they do that, it would be pretty interesting. Well, we do have a caller on the line. We have Charmaine, who's calling from Sarasota. Charmaine, what is your question?
Hi, Hi. It's not really so much a question as a comment. In Sarasota County, I served on our Sheriff's Animal Welfare Advisory Council from, 92 to 2012. And there was a lot of hubbub at that time over feral cats. So we did a great deal of research. And we found out that, for one thing, I completely agree with what your guests are saying, that cats absolutely should be kept inside. I mean, aside from the obvious, you know, bad kids, they like to drink all kinds of stuff like conditioning fluid from cars, and we have snakes that are poisonous and so forth. But besides that, and that dogs should not be out unsupervised, I do want to call to their attention that if they want to really look at numbers, the biggest, biggest, biggest killer, according to Audubon, is our developers. And right now in Sarasota County, we have one who's especially egregious and not only went against zoning to build what he wanted on an island where he destroyed protected lands after being told not to, but is insisting he's going to build next to our wildlife rescue center. And the head of the rescue center has said that this man will do more damage in 1 year than the rescue center can repair in their entire existence.
Yes, well, development is really a big issue, and we talked about that earlier this week as far as the panther area. But, yeah, that is an issue, and I know that that's something that the Conservancy works vigorously with. On the topic that she brought up briefly about feral cats, have you read any studies about feral cats being –
Well, feral cats, there's about one feral cat for every pet cat in the U.S. if you look at the numbers, which is about 60 million cats of each type. I'm focused my thesis on just domestic cats that are owned because it's so much easier to affect their behavior because there's a pet owner that's able to keep them inside or let them out less and things like that. Feral cats is just kind of a whole bigger issue that I have not tackled.
It is a big issue, and there's a debate. Do you ever have to deal with that, Joanna?
We get a lot of people who bring animals in that have been injured. So anecdotally, definitely they will talk about the feral cat colonies in their neighborhood because when someone brings an animal in, we do have information ready to try and help them understand and keep the pet indoors. And inevitably, you get those people who say, it's nobody's cat. It's the neighborhood cat. Everybody feeds this cat. So you know it's not someone's pet. So Colleen hasn't done a study with the ferals, we do hear that because of the number of animals we get in throughout Collier County, South Lee County, and we know obviously that ferals are an issue as well for native wildlife health.
Yeah, and well, you can't really control feral cats, so it makes sense to study the thing that can be controlled, right, where you can make an impact, and it seems like the greatest impact is just keeping them indoors. We are talking about house cat as a predator and also how other pets and even humans inadvertently have negative impacts on wildlife. You can get involved in our conversation by giving us a call at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. You can also reach out on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU. Tweet using the hashtag GCL. Joanna, this weekend, the Conservancy is holding a housewarming for the public to see their new addition to the Von Arx Wildlife Hospital. Part of the program of events includes educating people about how not to injure animals. What are some of the most common mistakes that people make that lead to injuries aside from letting their pet cat outside?
So there are several things that happen very frequently, causes of injury. One for sure is the fishing line and fishing hook injuries. If you are out and you're fishing, being very careful to not hand feed any of your scraps to the birds that may be hanging around in the area. Hand feeding leads to habituation, which leads to these animals expecting things, and it draws them closer to those types of interactions where they could possibly get hooked. If you accidentally hook a bird, do not cut the line. Many, many people think that the hook will rust out. It'll be fine. You cut that line, the bird flies off, and it has a line of, you know, trailing behind it. They're going to get caught up in the trees. They can hang and die. So the fishing is a big one in terms of, you know, just being aware of what's around you. Be careful when you cast in case a bird is flying by. It's some of them are harder, you know, being aware at night when you're going and you're driving through areas that may have lots of woods around, high populations of wildlife trying to cross those roads, just staying more alert, being focused, keep your speed down a tiny bit if you could, those types of things.
And put the cell phone away, right?
Well, I'm hoping the cell phone is put away. I'm just going with a given for that one, for their safety as well. There are things very simple. When you're going to be trimming your trees, ask the landscaper, if it's not you, to check the trees for active nests before you do your trimming. Try not to trim at the heart of baby season, which is, you know, early spring and summer, because so many animals are nesting, whether it's squirrels or birds, things like that. Planting native plants, that provides natural habitat, natural food source for the animals. So there's so many things people can do to promote coexisting with wildlife and hopefully reduce some of those injuries.
I want to ask you a quick question about the pelican. If you do happen to get a hook on a pelican, and you don't cut the line, what do you do?
What do you do? You try and reel it in. If you're on the beach, you know, just carefully reeling it in. The thing to do is try and get that bird covered as quickly as possible. Once the eyes are covered, it does help calm the bird down, and then you can handle it more easily. You need to gently try and push that hook through to expose the barb, clip the barb off, and then back it out. Just like if you poked it into your finger, you are not going to rip it back out. You're probably going to the ER and they're going to help you. The animals have same feeling of pain, things like that. You rip that hook out, you're doing a tremendous amount of soft tissue damage. So if it's a very deeply embedded hook, just bring it to a wildlife hospital. Ourselves, there's a place on Sanibel. You know, we can do it professionally and carefully if you're not feeling qualified, but you do have to remove that hook. I'm sorry, the barb, before you try and back the hook out.
And cover their eyes, you said?
Yep,
with like
cover
a beach
their
towel,
eyes.
Maybe?
Mm-hmm. Yep, or a t-shirt. A lot of people are out there and they may be in their swimming suit, so they've got a t-shirt handy. Anything they can do to decrease the visual stimulus is going to help calm the bird.
Okay. We have a call from Bonita Springs. This is Mark, and he has a comment about feral cats. What do you have to say, Mark?
Hi. Yeah, I was just wondering, I know you touched on it briefly, but I'm wondering if they have any opinion about the policy of trap near release, if that's actually an effective means of trying to, deal with the feral cat population, which I can say there's some neighborhoods down here where it's rampant. And I don't think, I don't see how the idea of trying to trap and neuter every animal and then release it back into the wild, which does nothing to solve the problem we're talking about, which is hurting wildlife.
Okay, I know. I've heard about this, Mark. What I think he's talking about is there are programs where you trap a feral cat, bring it in, have it neutered or spayed, and then released back into the wild. Does the Conservancy have a position on that? Or
we don't have an official opinion on that. You know, we do have policies from our policy department where we have official statements. We deal with a lot of information coming into us about TNR programs. The literature that I've read does not say it is effective in terms of reducing the cat populations. People think it does because the cat is now neutered or spayed. It can't reproduce. Much of the literature that I've read, unfortunately, people know about those programs, and a lot of times they will take them to areas where there are cat colonies and release their unwanted pet because they know someone's out there taking care of it. The thing to remember is cats are not a native species. It is an invasive species. And so releasing them into the environment is not putting an animal back where it belongs. Cats don't belong in the environment.
Yeah, well, and I've heard arguments on either side.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And I think getting ahead of cat reproduction and population is kind of going to be a tough one.
It is, yeah.
There have been arguments on either side, so I understand.
There are arguments, and I guess more than anything, it does open up conversations. People have different views, and we just need to be able to talk and try and see each other's points of view and move forward from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is. But all right. Another question that I wanted to ask you about is sea life. Just yesterday, our reporter Jessica Mazaros happened to see a manatee that was under distress because of red tide, which is apparently on the rise in our area. What does someone do if they see a large animal like that in the water, who do they call? Do they call the conservancy? Is there a protocol? Is there a clearinghouse to know how to get to the right person?
There is. FWC, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, would actually be the people to call.
Well, that's who was called on this one, yeah.
Yes.
So they were there.
Okay. So they have the connections of where to get that animal if they did need to bring it in and get it to a rehab center. We do not do manatees or larger marine life like that. But FWC, if you call them directly, you're cutting us out. We don't need to be in the middle, but we can obviously help you. If you know our number, we're going to get you to the right place. But FWC is the one that responds to strandings and marine life in distress.
Things like that. What if somebody sees, I think there are a couple sea turtles also that have been
brought
in from that.
Exact same thing. We actually have had probably scores of double-crested cormorants, which are the birds you see down at the beach, also affected by red tide. So it goes through so many different
Those
species.
Those are the guys that, have their
spread
wings,
spread
out?
Yeah. So over the past couple of months, we've been getting many, many, many cormorants admitted. And for us, what we're seeing is the animals almost appear drunk. The bird is stumbling on the beach. They're falling over. If they're in the water, they're really struggling to keep themselves above water. So those animals come to us, those types of birds, whether it's the terns, the cormorants, pelicans, all being affected by the toxicosis caused from the red tide. We are the ones to handle those situations.
So what do you do when you're on the beach and you see a cormorant that looks like he's drunk and he's having a hard time in the water?
Well,
Get him out of the water.
Yes. And again, getting the head covered, wearing eye protection is very important. Hopefully most people at the beach do have either regular glasses or they have their sunglasses. You always want to be careful. You know, keep yourself safe is the first thing. But if nobody helps it, it's going to probably drown. We do not have a rescue service. So if you call, we can't get there immediately. And in those types of situations, immediate response is needed to save the life of the animal. Again, getting them covered, the head and the body, get them covered with a towel. They do tend to calm down because, again, they can't see what's going on. If you can't transport it to the hospital, call us. Sometimes we can find volunteers in the area that can help pick things up. But it is actually easier than you think because the animal is debilitated. We're not asking you to go out and catch something that's perfectly healthy. These animals are in distress, and therefore you tend to have the upper hand.
Mm-hmm. And then when you transport them, have probably another person keeping their eyes covered,
definitely.
I would imagine.
Yes. You would need to have, hopefully, your passenger is holding the bird. You still want to keep control of the beak. Not so hard that the bird can't breathe, but making sure you have a secure grip, keeping the wings tucked up against the bird's body while it's covered in that towel, and then just get them to the hospital as quick as you can. If you happen to have a box or can keep a box in your car, if you're the type of person that you feel like you want to do something, keep those things in your car. Then you're not caught off guard. A towel, a small pair of gardening gloves, and a box or a pet crate. Then you're ready and you don't stress as much when a situation arises. You have the things you need to handle an animal in distress, and it makes it go that much more smoothly.
And maybe even some wire cutters in case you come across a fishing hook.
You could, yes. Mm-hmm.
Just to get that barb off
exactly.
Before you try to rip it.
Yeah, you can be the person to offer help when you see other people, tourists on the pier who are struggling, things like that. You can be the person to help.
And are these some of the things that you're going to be talking with people about this weekend during this open house, the housewarming that you're having?
Exactly. All of our new exhibits and our education programs deal with trying to give people information not only on how to prevent injuries, but what to do, how to be helpful. So all of that is covered when people come to the Nature Center and learn about what we're doing.
And what are they going to see when they get there?
Well, we have several new areas that people should really get to enjoy. We have the Sepaki Exhibit Hall, and there are hands-on exhibits for both adults and geared for younger children to interact with some of the displays and learn through hands-on interaction what we are trying to teach them, whether it's the prevention or how to help. We also have our new wildlife ambassadors that are on exhibit. So there are three birds of prey that they can get up close and personal with and learn about their plight, why they were brought to the wildlife hospital, why they are no longer releasable. So special talks that we're going to be giving, special crafts that will be happening that day. So it's all geared, family fun to educate without people really even know they're getting educated.
Yeah, well, that's always the best way to learn, right?
It is.
Is there a story of a particular animal that came into Von Ark's Wildlife Hospital that, that really sticks with you and resonates with you as far as what it is there for, and you know, that, so that you can explain to people how important something like this is in the community?
There's so many. It is hard to pick just one. The main thing is even the smallest ones matter, and I think that's so important. I know a lot of times for me during migration, we'll get these tiny little warblers. They're birds that are no longer than maybe the size of your index finger. They weigh 8 grams. They're tiny birds. They've migrated thousands and thousands of miles to get to us. They're exhausted, and there's so many challenges they can face, whether it's the collisions with the windows or the pets or the loss of habitat. And you just think it's so sad to know it made it here. It made it 2,000 miles from Canada or Wisconsin to get here and fall prey to something that maybe we could have prevented. So I know those stick in my mind, you know, and then they migrate to other countries and end up in areas where they might end up with pesticides that we no longer allow in the United States, but they might allow in other countries. So,
I know they do. They still allow DEET down in South. Yeah,
yeah, so many things. But it's pretty endless what you see, and to see the survival instinct in these animals is what I think touches me the most, is they try so hard. And if we could just understand a little bit more of their needs, maybe more of them will survive and not need to be brought to the wildlife hospital. But wildlife is truly amazing, no matter birds, mammals, or reptiles.
Which is what leads to things like the study that Colleen did, mm-hmm. looking at one thing that is controllable on the part of human beings. I wanted to get back to your study a little bit. I'm curious, how did you get to the estimate of the numbers?
Those estimates are actually from a couple different studies. Studies found that cats were killing a couple hundred million animals a year, but that was based on owner observation. So people saying, my cat brought me this many animals this week. And then they started doing these little kitty cam studies where they attach a little GoPro type camera to the cat's collar, and they can see what they actually do while they're outside. And those numbers really increased the estimates. And from that, that's where they're getting those billions of animals every year. Because they found out that they really are only bringing back a quarter of what they catch to the owner. So for every animal they bring you, they've killed three more. And so those studies are really looking at what they're doing. And they're also seeing how dangerous it is for the cats to be outside. They're seeing them drink from the puddles and go to other families even, and climb trees and get stuck in things and go down storm drains. And so the whole kitty cam study really just kind of enlightened everything.
Wow, that is really just – it's I can't believe that we live with this little kitty, and he's so cute, and he just goes out there, and they're taking out all these birds. And it's – is it causing problems in bird populations or
– It is, yes. There's several islands that have had domestic cats on them that have caused extinctions in bird species. But yeah, there are many, many bird species that populations that are now in decline, and cats are believed to be one of the biggest reasons. There are other factors, but cats are definitely believed to be one of the biggest.
Yeah, you can't blame it all on just one, but it's definitely a contributor, and mm-hmm. it's one that can be helped.
Right.
And like you said, with owners just keeping their cats indoors instead of letting them run around and run rampant. And plus, you know, you might fall in with a feral cat
mm-hmm.
group
mm-hmm. Yeah.
and, you know, thank the cool kids. All right. Well, I wanted to thank you guys for coming in and talking with us today. That's about all the time we have for our House Cat as Predator segment. Seems like the bottom line is keep your cats inside.
Yes.
Correct. And this Saturday, if you want to learn more about what the Von Ark's Animal Hospital does at the Conservancy of Southwest Florida, you can go and check it out. They're having a housewarming, and you can learn while you're having fun. That'll be great. So I wanted to thank you, Joanna Fitzgerald and Colleen Cosgrove. Congratulations on your study.
Thank you.
And I thank you for coming in today. Our show today was produced by Matthew Smith with technical help from A.J. Leonard and John Davis. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. Tomorrow on the show, from ZombieCon to Club Blue to the Pulse nightclub, Florida, much like much of the country, has seen its share of mass shootings. The unpredictability of such attacks is prompting active shooter programs. We'll talk with Collier County deputies and campus police about the Run, Hide, Fight response plan. And a shotgun blast rattled a Jewish temple in Naples this week, while white supremacist graffiti keeps showing up at FGCU. We'll talk to the Southern Poverty Law Center about where Florida fits into the 900 hate-related incidents reported nationwide in the last month. Thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.